Imagine waking up, right, to a knock on your door, and it's the police, and they tell you that your house was just used as the staging ground to rob the bank down the street.
Which is, you know, a terrifying thought.
Right. And you tell them, like, I was asleep all night. But they say, well, we know, because while you were sleeping, a crew of thieves quietly dug a tunnel starting from directly underneath your living room floor.
Yeah, bypassing all the bank's alarms by basically making it look like the vault access was coming from your residential address.
Exactly. It's a wild scenario.
It is. I mean, it's brilliant, but deeply unsettling. Because the traditional security mindset, it always assumes that threats exist outside a defined perimeter, right?
Yeah, you build a wall.
Right, you build a wall, and as long as that wall holds, you think you're safe. But modern attackers are just completely sidestepping that wall.
They're turning the exact infrastructure we rely on every single day into the weapons being used against us.
Yeah.
So welcome to today's deep dive. This is your specialized Cyber Mornings Daily Briefing. Our mission here is to cut through, well, the massive volume of noise out there and deliver a concise, high-impact briefing focused on the most critical security developments.
Excuses, there is always a lot of noise.
Oh, constantly. And today is May 13th, 2026, and we've got a heavy stack of threat intelligence reports, security advisories, and real-time incident updates to unpack for you.
And I think what really stands out across today's intelligence is this unified theme, right? It's the systemic weaponization of trust.
Right.
We're looking at threat actors hijacking the invisible trust between systems to completely bypass traditional defenses.
Yeah. And we have three major stories on the roadmap today that perfectly illustrate that shift. So first, we're looking at a massive supply chain poisoning event that's currently unfolding in the Ruby programming ecosystem.
That one's moving fast.
It really is. And from there, we'll examine a pretty severe memory corruption vulnerability hiding in the core email routing infrastructure that keeps the internet functioning.
Which is going to be a headache for administrators.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And finally, we'll break down a highly sophisticated new Android banking Trojan that literally transforms everyday mobile phones into an active, decentralized attacker network.
So no matter what part of the stack you touch, you're impacted.
Exactly. Whether you're a developer pushing code, a sysadmin keeping legacy servers online, or, you know, just someone carrying a smartphone in your pocket. Today's briefing is going to highlight how your slice of the tech stack is actively being targeted.
It really forces a total reevaluation of threat modeling. I mean, you aren't just protecting your own data anymore.
Right.
You're protecting your infrastructure from being conscripted into someone else's attack campo.
Yeah. So let's get straight into our first story. As of today, May 13th, Ruby Gems has completely paused all new account signups.
Wow.
Yeah. And for context, Ruby Gems is the standard package manager for the Ruby programming language. It's the central repository where developers go to download pre-packaged code libraries.
Right. It's the hub.
And they are actively dealing with a major coordinated malicious attack. We're looking at a massive spam publishing campaign where these automated bot accounts just flooded the registry with over 500 malicious packages.
500? That's huge.
It's massive. And the fascinating part is the targeting. The vast majority of these packages were aimed squarely at the software supply chain security firm, Mend.io.
And we really can't gloss over the severity of those packages either, because threat intelligence confirms that while some were just junk spam, right?
Yeah.
A significant portion carried active, highly destructive exploits.
Okay, let's unpack this, because the mechanics here are incredibly bold. This isn't a direct assault on a final application. This is like sneaking into a massive grocery distribution center.
I'll take that analogy.
Thanks. And slipping poisoned ingredients into the delivery trucks before they ever reach the local supermarkets.
Exactly.
If a developer unknowingly downloads one of these compromised Ruby packages to handle something simple, like, I don't know, formatting a date.
Right, something super mundane.
Yeah, they are baking that poison directly into the foundation of their application. But I do have to push back a little on the specific targeting here.
Oh, okay, go for it.
Why target Mend.io? I mean, they are a major security firm, explicitly tasked with securing environments like Ruby Gems. Isn't going after them a bit like trying to rob the police station?
It seems counterintuitive, right?
It seems wildly noisy. Like, if I'm an attacker trying to slip poison code into a registry, setting off the alarms at the premier security firm seems like the fastest possible way to get caught.
What's fascinating here is that the noise itself is actually likely the strategy.
Wait, really? The noise is on purpose.
Yeah. Groups operating in this space, like Team PCP, they've realized that open source ecosystems rely heavily on automated scanning to function at scale.
Okay.
So by flooding the registry with hundreds of packages specifically targeting a firm like Mend.io, the attackers might be executing an intentional resource exhaustion attack.
Ah, on the immune system itself.
Exactly. If you overwhelm the exact security scanners designed to catch you, or, you know, poison the specific diagnostic tools that developers rely on to verify their code, you create a massive blind spot.
So while the security firm is busy triaging 500 screaming alarms.
Right. The 500 first package, the truly stealthy one that's targeting a major financial institution, it just slips right past the automated checks.
Wow. So the attack on the security firm is essentially a smokescreen to blind the automated defenses.
A smokescreen with a massive financial payoff attached? Mm-hmm. I mean, this isn't just about causing chaos.
Right.
There was a report published by Google just this past Monday, and it maps out the exact monetization pipeline for these supply chain attacks.
What did they find?
Well, when developers pull down these poisoned packages, the malicious code typically executes a credential harvesting script.
Okay, so it's stealing data right away.
Right. It scrapes their environment variables, their SSH keys, their cloud access tokens, and then the attackers take those developer credentials and they sell them to the highest bidder on dark web initial access markets.
So they're basically acting as the specialized entry crew for the rest of the criminal underground.
Precisely. Google's report actually highlighted direct partnerships between these supply chain poisoners and major ransomware extortion groups.
Oh, man.
Yeah, because the ransomware operators, they don't want to spend weeks trying to fish a company.
Too much effort.
Right. They just buy the compromised developer token, log directly into the corporate network, and deploy the locker.
Which perfectly explains the drastic response from Ruby Central. I mean, they stepped in, blocked the bot accounts, and initially yanked about 120 malicious packages.
And that number grew fast.
Fast. As they dug deeper, that number quickly ballooned to over 500. So with account signups completely frozen today, they estimate it's going to take 2 to 3 days to get the registry back to normal operation.
That's a long time for a major ecosystem to be paused.
It is. They're using that time to work with Fastly to enable dedicated web application firewall protection and dramatically tighten the rate limiting on new account creations.
And honestly, that 2 to 3 day window is a painful necessity.
Yeah.
Yeah, because tuning a web application firewall to accurately distinguish between a legitimate developer publishing an update and an automated botnet pushing malicious code, it's incredibly complex.
Right, false positives.
Exactly. If you make the wave too strict, you break the entire deployment pipeline for millions of legitimate applications globally.
Yeah, so if you are building software today, this fundamentally shifts your operational reality.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to assume that the external building blocks you rely on are hostile until proven otherwise.
Absolutely.
You've got to heavily audit your dependencies, lock down your package versions, and isolate your build environments.
Because with RubyGems, we are looking at attackers exploiting the implicit trust developers place in external code registries.
Yeah.
But what happens when the vulnerability isn't in a library you choose to import, but it's actually embedded inside the foundational protocol you use just to keep your basic communications functioning?
Well, that transition brings us right to our second story. We just talked about malicious code being actively pushed into developers' environments, but we are moving straight to the backbone of internet routing now.
The stuff nobody thinks about until it breaks.
Exactly. A newly disclosed vulnerability, officially tracked as CVE-2026-45185, has just dropped, and it has been brilliantly dubbed Dead Letter.
Great name for an awful bug.
Right. We are talking about a severe use after free vulnerability in EXIM. And for those who don't spend their days managing server infrastructure, EXIM is an open source mail transfer agent, or MTA.
Yeah.
It's the software sitting on countless Unix-like systems, silently receiving, routing, and delivering the world's email.
Just to put the scale into perspective for you, EXIM handles a massive percentage of all internet email traffic.
Like over half, usually, right?
Oh, yeah. So when a vulnerability hits EXIM, it hits the global communication grid.
This specific flaw was discovered by Federico Kirschbaum, the head of the security lab at XBOW, back on May 1st. And it impacts EXIM versions 4.97 through 4.99.2.
But there's a caveat.
Right. There is a very specific condition here. It only affects builds that are compiled using NodeSLS for their secure connections.
Yeah.
If your server was built using OpenSSL, you actually dodge this particular bullet entirely.
Which is lucky for some, But for the massive number of administrators relying on Nutella's builds, the mechanics of this exploit are just a masterclass in precision memory corruption.
Oh, it's wild.
Yeah, the security researchers at XBOW have characterized this as one of the highest caliber bugs ever discovered in the Exim codebase.
And the trigger sequence is genuinely fascinating. It occurs during the parsing of what's called a binary data transmission, or BDT.
Right.
Based on the technical advisory, the attacker, acting as the client, sends a TLS close notify alert before the body of the email transfer is actually finished.
Crucial step.
Yeah. And then immediately following that close alert, they send a single final byte in clear text over the exact same TCP connection.
Just one byte.
Just one. So let me visualize this to make sure I have the mechanism right. It feels like someone is in the middle of a secure encrypted phone call. And they abruptly hang up the phone to terminate the secure line. But as they're walking away, they slip a single unencrypted paper note under the door.
That's a perfect way to look at it.
But how does a single character, literally just a line break or a backslash NS, how does that corrupt an entire enterprise email server's memory heap?
So the beauty of that analogy is that it perfectly highlights the synchronization failure inside Exim.
Okay.
When the client sends that TLS close notify alert, Exim acts responsibly, right? It begins its internal shutdown sequence and it frees up the TLS transfer buffer.
Got it.
It essentially tells the server's memory manager, hey, I am done with this block of memory. You can have it back for something else.
So that specific patch of memory is officially marked as available space.
Available, but highly structured. And here is where the critical flaw exists. While Exim told the TLS system to shut down, a nested receive wrapper, the thing specifically handling the BDAT transmission, is still actively running.
Oh no, so it didn't get the memo.
Exactly, it never got the memo that the connection was terminated. So when the attacker slips that single clear text byte in that final note under the door, the BDAT wrapper uses a function called unjetcetera.
Okay.
And this function takes that single byte and writes it directly into the memory region that Exim just officially marked as freed.
Wait, I am still a little stuck on the impact here though. If the memory was just freed, isn't it just empty space? Like, why does writing a single line break into an empty void cause a remote code execution vulnerability?
Because in a modern operating system, freed memory is never just empty space.
Oh.
No, the system uses the very beginning of those freed blocks to store what's called the allocator metadata.
Allocator metadata.
Yeah. Think of it like the master index file of a massive library.
Mm-hmm.
It tells the system exactly where every book is, how big the shelves are, and where the empty spaces are located.
Oh, okay.
So when that unjetty function writes that single malicious byte, it isn't writing into empty space. It's overwriting the librarian's master index.
Oh, wow. So if you corrupt just one number in the index,
yeah,
the whole organizational system just collapses.
Completely collapses. By altering the allocator's internal shape with that single byte, the attacker gains what we call code execution primitives.
Meaning they can tell it what to do?
Right. They trick the server into writing subsequent pieces of data into memory locations it shouldn't have access to, which eventually allows them to seize total control of the system.
And the barrier to entry for this exploit is terrifyingly low.
It really is.
I mean, the attacker does not need stolen credentials. They don't need a user to click on a phishing link. The advisory makes it explicitly clear. An attacker only needs the ability to establish a standard TLS connection and use the chunking SMTP extension.
Which is standard everyday behavior for an email server receiving a large file.
Right. So it's operationally silent.
It is. And it's crucial to recognize the historical context here, too, because yeah. Exim has a dark history with the BDAT protocol. Oh, yeah. Parsing binary chunks of data while maintaining state across a network connection is incredibly complex. Back in 2017, they had to patch a very similar vulnerability.
What was it?
CVE-2017-16943. And that one carried a massive 9.8 out of 10 CVSS severity score.
Wow.
Yeah, that bug also allowed unauthenticated remote code execution via malformed BDAT commands. So the fact that we are seeing another critical flaw in this exact same protocol parsing logic 9 years later.
It just proves that this remains a deeply fragile area of the architecture.
Exactly.
So if you are an administrator managing Exim servers right now, your priority is immediate remediation. The vulnerability has been completely patched in version 4.99.3.
Patch now.
Yes, and I want to stress this heavily.
Okay.
There are absolutely zero mitigations for this flaw. You can't just tweak a configuration file. You can't disable a minor feature or add a firewall rule to make this go away.
The only path forward is upgrading to 4.99.3 immediately.
Yeah, the new patch fundamentally alters how the input processing stack handles a TLS close notification, ensuring it cleanly resets and prevents those stale memory pointers from ever being accessed by the unGetArrayD function.
It's a harsh reality check regarding legacy internet infrastructure. You know, we blindly trust these massive invisible systems to securely route billions of messages daily.
Right.
But an attacker just needs to speak the standard language of the server to potentially rip the doors off your entire mail routing operation.
It's scary. And so we started by looking at attackers hijacking developer registries to push poison software. Then we saw them exploiting memory management flaws to hijack the core servers, routing our email.
Right.
For our final story in today's briefing, we're looking at the evolution of weaponized trust at the consumer level. Like, what happens when the attackers decide to use the smartphone sitting in your pocket as their personal networking hardware?
And this represents perhaps the most insidious tactical evolution we're trapping right now.
We're looking at a newly discovered and highly advanced variant of the Tricmo Android banking Trojan.
Tricmosi.
Yes, Tricmosi. It was unearthed by the mobile security research team at Threat Fabric between January and February of this year, 2026.
And they're seeing a lot of activity.
Yeah, they've observed it actively targeting banking and cryptocurrency users, with the highest concentration of victims currently in France, Italy, and Austria. Now, the name Tricmo isn't new to the threat landscape, right?
No, it's been around.
It surfaced back in late 2019, primarily operating as a straightforward credential stealer. It would abuse Android's accessibility services to quietly read your screen and intercept your SMS one-time passwords.
Right, standard banking Trojan stuff.
But the distribution and capabilities of this new Tricmosi variant are on an entirely different level.
Well, the initial infection vector relies on a very modern social engineering lure.
It does. They are distributing this via fake adult-themed TikTok applications circulating heavily through advertisements on Facebook.
Right.
So you're scrolling your feed, you see a provocative ad, and you click download. But that initial fake app is actually just a dropper.
It's just the first stage.
Exactly. Once installed, it dynamically pulls down a secondary payload, an APK file, at runtime. And to ensure the user doesn't panic when they see the installation prompt, that secondary APK masquerades completely as Google Play Services.
Which is a brilliant evasion technique.
Sneaky.
Yeah. By dropping the actual malicious payload dynamically at runtime, they completely bypass the static security analysis that scans the initial app download. And hiding behind the trusted icon of Google Play Services, I mean, that ensures the user just grants whatever permissions the malware requests.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Tricmo also has moved far beyond just scraping passwords. The researchers at Threat Fabric discovered that the new payload includes an integrated SSH tunnel and a fully functional SOCKS5 proxy.
SOCKS5 proxy on your phone.
Right. The technical report explicitly states that these features allow the infected device to function as a programmable network tivet and a traffic exit node. So, going back to our burglary scenario from the intro, the attacker isn't just breaking in to steal the banking app password off your phone. They're using the proxy to establish a secure tunnel directly through your device.
Yes.
But here is the part I need you to clarify for us. The command and control infrastructure for this proxy relies on the TON decentralized blockchain.
Yes, the open network.
Right. Why go through all the trouble of engineering a decentralized blockchain proxy just to route network traffic? Like, why not just bounce the connection off a fast, anonymous VPN server in a non-extradition country?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, using the TON network actually solves the two greatest problems a threat actor faces.
Which are?
Takedowns and fraud detection.
Okay.
Historically, malware would phone home to a centralized command and control server using standard DNS requests. Security analysts would spot the malicious traffic, flag the domain, and the hosting provider would unplug the server.
And the entire botnet would instantly die.
Exactly. A single point of failure. But Tricmosi embeds a native TON proxy directly into the malicious APK on the victim's phone.
Oh, wow.
So every single outbound request the malware makes is addressed to a .adnl hostname. This traffic doesn't use traditional internet DNS. It resolves entirely through the decentralized TON overlay network.
So it just looks like normal traffic.
It perfectly blends the malicious command and control traffic into the background noise of legitimate blockchain activity. And because the infrastructure is decentralized across thousands of global nodes, traditional law enforcement takedown efforts are practically impossible.
Because there is no central server to unplug.
Right. So it guarantees the botnet stays online.
But what about the SOCKS5 proxy specifically?
Yeah.
How does routing traffic through the victim's phone, help the attacker actually steal the money.
That is where this becomes devastating to the banking industry.
Okay, tell me.
When an attacker successfully steals your password and tries to log into your bank account, the bank's fraud detection systems immediately analyze the incoming IP address. If your account is registered in Paris and the login attempt originates from a known bulletproof hosting provider in Eastern Europe,
the bank's algorithm scores it as highly suspicious and blocks the transaction.
Exactly. The IP reputation triggers an immediate red flag.
Right.
But Tricmo fundamentally bypasses that system. The attacker uses the SOCKS5 proxy to route their login request through the victim's compromised Android phone.
Oh.
Yeah. The malware subsystem even supports running standard network diagnostic commands like curl, ping, and traceroute right from the device.
Wow.
So when the bank servers analyze the transaction, the login attempt isn't coming from a suspicious foreign IP. It is literally originating from the victim's trusted home Wi-Fi or their daily cellular provider.
To the bank's multi-million-dollar fraud algorithm, it just looks like perfectly normal, localized user behavior.
The call is coming from inside the house, and the fraud systems simply wave it through.
That is deeply unsettling. Because the user has absolutely no idea their phone is actively facilitating a heist.
None at all.
And based on Threat Fabric's analysis, the developers behind Tricmo are already preparing for the next escalation.
Yeah, they found some concerning stuff in the code.
Right. The researchers found highly advanced dormant features embedded in the code capabilities that are fully programmed, but haven't actually been activated yet.
Yeah.
They discovered the Pine Dynamic hooking framework bundled alongside extensive declarations for NFC-related permissions.
Which is a huge red flag.
It strongly implies that in a future update, these threat actors intend to use the infected phone to intercept or even clone NFC payment card data directly from the device's hardware.
The evolution from a simple password scraper to a decentralized network proxy is just striking.
It really is.
The reality you have to accept is that the definition of mobile malware has fundamentally transformed. It is no longer just about data theft. The threat actors are conscripting consumer devices at a massive scale. Your personal smartphone is being forcefully converted into a fortified, decentralized node in a global, invisible botnet. You aren't just the victim of the initial compromise anymore. Your hardware is the active weapon being aimed at the banking sector.
So what does this all mean when we pull these three distinct stories together? Today's briefing covered the entire spectrum of our daily technology stack.
From top to bottom.
Yeah. At the very top, we saw the software supply chain compromised, with developers unknowingly pulling down poisoned Ruby gems that target their security scanners.
Right.
In the deep foundational routing layer, we saw legacy EXIM email servers exposed to total takeover through a single maliciously placed byte of memory.
Yep.
And all the way down at the consumer level, we watched an Android banking Trojan transform a personal smartphone into an undetectable proxy for international financial fraud.
It's all connected.
Modern cybersecurity has clearly moved beyond simply defending against direct frontal assaults. The core challenge today is defending against our own trusted systems being quietly hijacked and weaponized against others.
We are witnessing the total erosion of the traditional security perimeter. I mean, the tools, the protocols, and the hardware we inherently trust to build our applications, route our messages, and manage our finances, they are the exact vehicles actively delivering the threat.
The burglar isn't smashing a window to get inside. They are already standing in the living room, wearing the uniform of the very infrastructure we trust to protect us.
And this raises an important question for you to mull over as you navigate these systems today.
What's that?
We've seen attackers seamlessly use trusted developer registries, establish email protocols, and decentralized mobile networks to completely camouflage their operations.
Right.
As threat actors increasingly embed themselves within the legitimate everyday operations of our open source ecosystems and blockchain networks, will the future of cybersecurity require us to fundamentally redefine what normal network traffic actually looks like?
That is a heavy, critical question. But it is exactly the mindset required to defend against this generation of threats. Thank you for joining us for this specialized deep dive. We hope this Cyber Mornings Daily Briefing provided you with the actionable intelligence required to navigate today's threat landscape.
Absolutely.
Keep asking hard questions, rigorously audit your external dependencies, patch those EXIM servers immediately, and most importantly, stay curious. We will catch you on the next deep dive.